I have to my right Blanca Moreno. You live in Apopka now? Yes. And Blanca's husband is, what's his title, director? Director of the Florida Farm Workers Association. And I'll get her to say a little more about that, what that means. But and over on my far right is Leo Falcone, who used to work with us, and now he's down at in Orlando with Lake Eola and a couple other venues down there. So what we're going to, and we have another speaker who's on his way, Tom Granato, who plays with Conjunto Aventura. He'll be here in a minute. And what we're going to be talking about is migrant farm worker life and the things that are involved. And maybe we'll start with Blanca. If you could just talk a little bit about the Farm Workers Association, what it is, get started, and I'll prompt you with questions.
Okay. The Farm Workers Association was formed, it's a non-profit organization formed about 22 years ago by my husband, Tirso Moreno, and another three nuns from Notre Dame. This organization helped the immigrant people. Most of them work on the fields. And
can you tell me about the ethnic makeup of the Farm Workers Association members?
Okay, the Farm Workers Association have 6,000 members, and let's say the 80% there are Spanish, Mexican members. The organization have office on Homestead, Florida, another one in Immokalee, Florida, and the other one in Pearson, Florida.
And for those of you who might not know, Pearson is in what some people call the St. John's River Valley. It's south of the Palatka, south of Palatka. If you take State Road 40 through Ocala National Forest and go north about halfway to Palatka, 15 miles,
Volusia County,
something
yeah.
like that. And that's largely fern workers there?
Yeah, most of the farm workers there works in fernery. You know, the fern is just like on the, ¿cómo se dice en el bosque?
In the forest.
Like in the forest. And I didn't have experience to be working on the farm, but what I hear and what I see, the farm workers, the people who works in the farms, they're in a lot of dangers because they're in sneakers, víboras, snakes.
Yeah, they do work in a very hostile environment, surrounded by snakes and sometimes alligators, depending what kind of farming they are doing. What is interesting, Blanca, is a lot of people think that farm workers are mostly illegal immigrants, and that's not the case. We do have a large percentage of farm workers that are legal immigrants, and people that actually have been born here, and that's their way of life.
Yeah, since the 1987. I think the population become a lot of legalization. So right now, I didn't say that all the farm workers are illegal. It's not the case. I cannot say the percentage of the ones who have papers who don't have. I can say that it's not true that all the immigrants are illegal. It's a lot of families that live here. They raise the children here. They're born and raised here. So, and those families, they work on the fields. They are not illegal. So I cannot say that it's true when they talking about the immigrant, they're illegal. Not.
That's a good segue to our next guest. I happen to know Tom was born in Michigan. His dad was, I'll let him talk about it, but his dad was like a crew chief or a contractor. So, Tom, can you just kind of Can you kind of recap some of the work you did when you were growing up and how it was and what the circuit was that you traveled?
Yeah, I guess my dad really started like around 1960, as far as back as I can remember. He was a what they call a crew leader, and what that was basically a contractor that contracted to you know, pick agricultural whether it was tomatoes, strawberries in Michigan or cherries and stuff like that. So we used to travel from back then from Homestead all the way to Michigan during the year. Usually, let's just say, for instance, we started in, we call our home Homestead because that's where the time we spent most time at. And we would be in Homestead from basically from October all the way to, let's see, towards the end of October to about May. Or yeah, and then we would move to Central Florida, which was in Palmetto area, and pick the tomato crops there for about 5 weeks. Then we would move to either North Carolina, South Carolina, sometimes Delaware, and if not, most of the time we would go either to Indiana and Michigan. Indiana.
What were you doing
first.
In those states? What were you picking?
Indiana was the well, Homestead and Palmetto area, Bradenton area, all that area there, it was the green tomatoes. And then, of course, then they get ripe and they ship them to, before they get ripe, they ship them to the stores and stuff. But in Indiana, it was the ripe tomatoes, and mostly for canning companies like Campbell Soup and other companies that would can the ripe tomatoes for different things, you know, ketchup and stuff like that. Then we would go from there to Michigan and do strawberries and cherries. And then by then it was basically time to get back home because it was getting to a point where it was cold or getting cold and there's no crops to be picked at that time. So we come back to Homestead and start all over again.
When you were traveling, this is all what they call truck farming. So then,
yes.
Did your dad have some big flatbed trucks? How did you travel? What kind of equipment did you travel with?
Well, I guess you could say sort of like the wagon train back in the 1800s. But yes, sort of in that manner. But it was, of course, not a wagon train. It was the flatbed trucks, because my dad would have like between my dad and my uncles, it was sort of like a company together. They would. Bring their you know, their company together and have like five or six trucks. And so usually when we moved from one state to another, we either in some trucks we would have people basically as we would close them in with sideboards and a tarp over the truck or the back of the truck, and people would ride in the back. I rode in there for quite a bit of times. It was fun for me. I was a kid, but a lot of there were some families, of course, and kids, and some people didn't have their own vehicle, so that was their way to get from one place to the other, working for my dad and my uncles.
I know, of course. You know, everybody realizes that the migrant life. There was a lot of difficulties, a lot of tough parts, but were there some good parts that you remember?
Oh yeah, you know, I really enjoyed it because I got to see a lot of the country, and I got to go to school. I wasn't always working in the fields because my dad wanted me to go to school and my mom, so I went I started school up north, and because over there I think it started like around August, and down in Homestead, it started in September, so it was like a month earlier. So I would start school over there and then come down to Homestead and do the middle part and then go to Palmetto and finish my school there. So I had to go three different areas to go to school. But But it was fun also because I got to meet, you know, a lot of the, you know, the students from those areas, and it was sort of like they wanted to know something about us, and of course I was a kid, so I wanted to learn more about the way of life that they lived over there. And it's different every place you go, you know. But I really enjoyed it. As a kid, I enjoyed it. And, of course, as I grew older, I became a driver for my dad and helped out, you know, until back in 1976, we had a bad freeze down in Homestead, and it just wiped the field, the whole crop that year. So from then on, I just I started working for a delivery company for TV and electronics parts, basically. I didn't go to the fields anymore.
I was going to ask both of you, what kind of products do you grow in your Central Florida area? Because when I started doing the field work, I was very surprised to find, you know, people were, you know, cultivating jalapenos, and you know, it's like, and those are, you know, Chris was talking earlier about, you know, foreign products, you know, hitting our markets, and there you have a huge area that is growing tropical products. So what is the main products that they're growing down there?
Okay, I used to be a migrant when I was, I think it was in the 1980. We used to travel with our children, and we do the oranges here in Central Florida, and when the season stopped, we traveled to Michigan. We traveled to Ohio to do the cucumbers, and we traveled to Michigan to do the apple, and it was the red apple and the yellow apple. They do the peaches, but I didn't like it because they itch. So only my husband was working on that that product. But in Central Florida, where I live, it was a big company, Selwyn Company. They closed down that company, but they have at that time they have green peppers, they have lettuce, they have squash, corn. A lot of vegetables, and you know, it gave me the opportunity to because I was coming from Mexico at that time, and I can tell you that I know more here the states than Mexico, because we travel from one state to another state. So I have the opportunity to see how they grow the green peppers, the lettuce, because I didn't know how they grow the lettuce. So things that we learn on steps and the way that, you know, we are working and we doing the season vegetables. In Central Florida, I think that 3/3 of people works on the labor on the fields. I think the big areas is like he say Homestead, Immokalee is in another area where it's a lot of, I can say Mexican people, because the Mexican, that's the one who works really on the fields. And at that time we started working on the fields, and we have the opportunity to work with Coca-Cola, Minute Maid. They have a contract at that time with the union in California with Cesar Chavez, is when we aspire to work for our people, because we see a lot of injustice. I don't want to talk about, you know, bad about crew leaders, but at that time it was crew leaders right there, and my husband was the one who was against, because he likes for the people to have the money, you know. I know the companies, they like to have a crew leaders, because the crew leaders, they can help, you know, with the people. But at that time, my husband started looking at that it was better to form an organization to fight for the rights for the immigrants, and that's how we started. Now that because we make money, no, we wanna at that time to fight for our people, to look for our people to find the ways they can do better on the fields. They work hard so they can have the money, but still at this time this organization work real hard because they don't want the farm workers have form a union, or they are not able to have benefits. So this organization, the Farm Workers Association of Florida, work for to find the way they can look for a better life for the farm workers, and they do a lot of lobbying in Tallahassee to make sure that the farm workers they are covered by some benefits. But let me tell you, that it's real hard. But it's a lot of people there that they have faith and they work hard. So probably one day the farm worker have a benefits like anybody else. I believe that the farm worker is an honest job, and they have the same rights for, like, if I work in construction because construction, they don't have much benefits. But if I work in a company, let's say
in a bank or
company, they have the right to have benefits, health insurance, workers' comp. The farm workers at this moment is still do not covered by health insurance. And like I say, they fight. There's a lot of people. It's not a lobbyist. It's a lobbyist. Lobbyist. People who are fighting over there to see if one day the farm workers have a better life, benefits and everything. So, and we're still fighting right now.
On another, looking at things from another angle, of course, Tom and I have talked a lot over the years, but can you talk a little bit about some of the cultural stuff that went on as you traveled, like basically wherever you go, there'd be music and stuff, and some of the movies even, and then music during the intermissions and dances, and even bring us up to date of what goes on today with all that?
Well, yeah, I guess... first of all, music is very deep-rooted in our culture. It's like sort of like in every family, the music is always a big part of the family and the culture. So you know, when we used to travel to these different states, of course, we had our parties like anybody else would, and whether it be a Sweet 16, which we call a quinceañera. Sometimes at the end of the season, my dad would make a party for all the workers so they can as an appreciation for their work, for working for him. And I can relate to what she was saying about some crew leaders there. Yeah, there are some that have abused the people, and of course there are some good ones too, and so there's good and bad in everything. But we enjoyed the different things that we did with our. Most of the times they would call it camps where we were at. It's like a sort of like barracks, and we'd have every family would have like maybe one or two areas or rooms, depending on the size of the family. And wherever we went, whether it was Michigan, Indiana, Ohio, or Pennsylvania, North Carolina, whatever, there was always somebody. Back in the 60s, I remember, in early 70s, when I first started playing, you know, some of the promoters knew where the people were going to travel to because of over the years. So they would go to these areas, and they would make also dances for the community. So, you know, people would come from different parts of the area nearby to these dances. And so basically that was our means of entertainment on a weekend. And to this day, it's still part of that, you know.
A lot of the music that is written, especially in the border and in rural areas, is related to agricultural theme, you know, to agricultural topic.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, have you ever written a song about a tomato? Because I have heard, you know, very cool songs, actually, that relate directly to agricultural traditions. So.
I've never written anything like that, but I've heard a lot of songs of what you're talking about. As a matter of fact, there's a song called El Troquero. El Troquero, which means the trucker, which back in those days, a crew leader, they didn't used to call, I said crew leader, but that's what they started calling later in the 70s and 80s. But actually, troquero is what they used to call the crew leaders, because they have the trucks, and which is what they use to pick up the crops from the fields, take to the warehouses and stuff. So there's a song called El Troquero, and he talks about, you know, he's going from one place to the other, and basically it's more of a cheating kind of song, because he says he's got a girlfriend in this town, and he's got a girlfriend in that town, and stuff like that, you know. But anyway, that's one of the things that's kind of, you know, on the negative side. But that song relates to the migration of people from state to state, you know, traveling and going to work and stuff like that. But there is a lot of songs. I just don't know, like, a whole bunch of them to really say much about them. That is a very sort of classic song that I've heard since I was a kid. And
yeah, the reason I ask that is because, you know, some people around here might be asking, you know, what does immigrant, you know, migrant label and farmers working have to do with that theme? And it does, you know, a lot of the songs that are written, a lot of the traditions that emerge from a specific group come from their occupation. And a lot of the music that we have in our communities, you know, relate to the kind of job we do. And you know, in like my hometown, you know, we grew up in a fishing town, so we do have a lot of music that relates to fish and going fishing. And in the case of, you know, a lot of the music that some Mexican communities have, you know, like nopalitos. I have heard songs about nopalitos, and we were talking about, Chris was talking about nopalitos. And so it's very, very much related to the music that emerges. So that's what the reason I was asking you, you mm-hmm. know, that question.
And
okay.
No, I was just going to say, I was born in Michigan, as you can see. That's part of my family traveling. but another thing that maybe a lot of people don't know, and I want to explain this, from my mother's side, she was born in Texas, and also my dad, he was from San Antonio. My grandparents also on my dad's side from San Antonio, and my mom's side, they were from West Texas. But the thing that really, you know, that I want to point out is when Texas was part of Mexico, that's where my family lived, or my great-grandparents. So people ask me sometimes, well, what part of Mexico are you from? I said, well, actually, I was from part of Mexico that's now Texas. So, I mean, someone said once, I did not cross the border crossed me, you know? So, and that was back in the 1848, I believe, when all this happened. But I remember my mom telling me, at the time when all that happened, they were asked, you know, you can either, to, you know, grandparents back then, you can either stay here since you already live here, or you can go to the other side of the river, the Rio Grande, and you know, be part of Mexico in that region. So they decided, some of them did go that way, but most of them stayed there where they were raised and born and stuff. So that's part of my heritage, coming back from that back in time.
Yeah, that's something.
We have like 20 minutes left. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I wanted, I asked Jeanette to come up front here. This is Jeanette Eason, the wife of the late Willie Eason, the Sacred Steel guy. And you got something you could tell us. She used to do farm work years ago down around Sanford and Lake Mary. And you were talking about snakes. Do you want to tell it or shall I tell it? You want to tell it? Tell about snakes.
Well, for one thing, I thank God for giving me a gift. But if I walk out there, I know a snake is out there. And I work through, I'll just make it quick. I work through celery, cabbage, you name it, picking oranges from the time I was 9 years old. And I supported my mother, father, and 9 sisters and brothers working on the farm. But it was one thing that led me to ask my boss, if I'm making $8 a day and you're going back in the 50s, cutting corn, you have to stop the mule train. I have to go back and help 2 more people catch up. So the mule train have to stop. So here I go back and take 2 rows up. And I ask him, I said, Mr. Jansen, I said, if I take 3 rows, what would happen? And during the time, my name was Shatter because I moved so fast. He said, Shatter, baby, you can't do it. I said, try me. I took those 3 rows, and I kept them up. The only thing he asked of me was to let him know every morning when he get on that farm, and we had to be out there at 6 o'clock. He'd take the truck, like you were saying, you haul some of your migrant workers in the trucks. He would pick, had trucks come out of Sanford that would ride all through Sanford. You got Maitland, Orlando, Altamont, you know, all those places, Longwood, would pick those people up and take them into the fields. And he said, the only thing I ask you, if it's a snake in that field, baby, please let me know. And I told him, but we travel also as migrant workers all the way up, and this is the East Coast I'm talking about, not only in Florida. We started in Belgrade, Pehokee, in that area, cutting cane with the Jamaicans. And we found out that we could go north and make a little bit more money. So my father took his truck and loaded up, and we went north. It was about 8 or 9 trucks at the time. We hit Delaware. Then we would go into Virginia and then into Maryland. And those are the states that we covered with sweet potatoes, white potatoes, corn, whatever they was growing during that time. And in doing so, we came back to Florida. And then that's when we would go back doing the same things back over again. But everything you said about the farmers, and that you had some crooked ones. I mean, this world is not pure. And I've seen it. I've seen it here in St. Petersburg, where I come from, in the past couple of years. And when you take a contract, if you can't take it right and supply the people with what they need, you don't need that contractor. Because he's taking his, putting it in his pocket, and riding around while you do the work. And today we have to. And any nationality, white, black, Spanish, Puerto Rican, Canadians, or whoever, come to America should be able to get the same thing. If Bush say, now listen to me, the people in America don't want to do this work, so I'm going to bring the Mexicans in. You didn't only come here in 67. In 1951, Mexicans was working in the field with me. All right? So there's a lie being told somewhere, because now he want to send you back. You should tell him, we should put in some kind of paper, let the people write, and tell him to take the monies that he's given to the Iraqis, take the money from Cheney and send Cheney to the farm and let you go to Washington.
All right.
Okay, we got to wrap up, folks. One thing, I don't know, she didn't quite make it clear, but Jeanette had a talent when she was young for she could detect snakes in a field. The crew leader would bring her out and say, is this field safe? And sometimes she'd say no. And she'd find a snake. She said, there's a snake in there, and they'd go out and they'd find it. Anyhow, thanks a whole lot to Blanca and Tomas Granado.
Thank you.
And Leo, thanks a lot.
Have a question?
Okay, we got to get the